Hey.
Hey, what's up? It's Andy.
What's up, Andy?
How you doing, man?
Good. How you been, man?
I'm good. Am I catching you at a good time?
Yeah. Sure.
Ready to talk some music?
Absolutely.
So I guess you're not on tour right now, then, if you're in...
No. Yeah, we just finished up a little run, but... yeah.
How was
that? We did ACL... It was really good, man. We ended up missing the last... Well, I flew out for a wedding for the last weekend, but the Highly Suspect ended up not playing because Johnny broke his ankle, so they weren't able to play for the last weekend.
During the show?
No, like the day before. I don't know exactly what happened. I flew out, so I wasn't there, but he broke his ankle, yeah, so they couldn't play. He wanted to pull like a Dave Grohl or whatever and play in a boot, but the doctor said that it really wasn't a good idea, that he needed to go get it taken care of and stay off of it and not. So he didn't do anything more. And he might have to get surgery. I really don't know yet. I haven't talked to him in a couple days.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's a rough one. But like I said, at least it happened on the last weekend of the tour. So,
whole rest of it. Totally, yeah, it was good.
What was your favorite date or venue or crowd?
I really liked Tulsa. I mean, we played Kane Ballroom. That's one of my favorite places to play, just because of the history and stuff, you know. And the crowd is amazing there. It's a great show. Houston
was
really good too. What is it? What?
What club is that?
Kane's Ballroom. It's a legendary venue. It's like an old honky tonk from way back. Everybody's played there.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I
never heard of that place. I don't know much about Tulsa, though.
Yeah, I mean, I've been there a bunch of times, but I like Tulsa a lot. It's super cool. The first time I ever went there, there was much going on. And it's really, there's a lot more going on now. It's a pretty hip town.
Yeah.
For Oklahoma, you know.
I like hearing about like sort of out of the way places that I never thought about before.
Yeah, man, for sure.
You know, who knows? Like Los Angeles is getting a little unlivable in terms of the cost of living out here. So I'm always looking for some sort of escape route.
Well, I think one of the best cities in the country is Pittsburgh, my opinion.
I love Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh's the shit.
I went there a few years ago. Yeah, I had a great time in Pittsburgh, and I was
doing
the same
cool
thing while I was there.
There's a lot going on, and it's just a really beautiful town, and it's not like insane like a lot of other bigger cities. You know, the people are super cool, and there's a lot of people that like escaped there from other like more, you know, other cities on the East Coast. Just a lot of people got priced out. There's a lot of cities like that. Like a city that's really big right now is Richmond, which is really funny, but there's a lot going on there right now.
Yeah, Richmond's going crazy. I know a bunch of people that moved there in the past few years.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's fun to go to different towns. That's one of the best things about touring.
How long have you been in Los Angeles?
Like over a year. Moved here from Brooklyn. My wife.
Yeah, you said your wife brought you out here?
Well, no, we moved out here together, you know. We just got sick in New York at the time, and we wanted to try something new. Kind of wanted to just get away from the cold weather, at least for a little while. Decided to come out here. She works in film, so it was an easy transition for her.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Although, I had a friend who is really funny. He moved back to Atlanta from Los Angeles to break into film.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of film going on there, too. That's another awesome city. One city that I never thought I would ever give a shit about growing up and whatever. And by the time I got there for the first time, I fell in love with it immediately. And I have friends that live there, too. Like, our agent lives there and stuff. He's a great guy. But the town's – oh, I love that town. It's awesome.
That's where I went to college.
Oh, you did? That's cool. Atlanta's great, man. It's good. I like it a lot.
And back when I was in college, there was cheap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was a really nice thing about it, especially because, you know, I was in college and didn't have any money.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Good place to be down south.
Yeah, man. Sure.
But let's talk about Northern Virginia.
Okay.
For a little while.
Sure.
We're talking about every city other than other than D.C. and Northern Virginia. Were you born and raised?
No. No, I moved to Nova when I was like 11. My family, I grew up in like South Shore, Massachusetts, Boston, South Shore. And we moved there when I was like 11 years old. And then I think I moved away when I was 25 or something like that. I moved back to Massachusetts actually for a little while.
You did a decent bit.
Yeah, I was there like 15 years, I think.
What was the adjustment like when you got there at 11?
It was rough. It was this culture shock and a half. Like, I grew up in really, like, you know, it was so suburban and, like, it just looked like movies, like suburbs and movies, you know. And I think before I moved there, I didn't really know what to expect. I thought that it was just going to be, like, the rural South. Like, I didn't know what the hell it was. And then we got there, and it was just ultra-suburban, and people were really into, you know, it was, like, a lot different than where I grew up, you know. It was just...
How did you bond with people when you first
say that again?
I said, how did you bond with people? Like, how, what things did you make friends with people over?
I think the first few people was just kind of like maybe kids that lived in the neighborhood. I mean, that's growing up on the South Shore in Weymouth. You're friends with kids in the neighborhood. And maybe then you met kids at school, but you couldn't ride your bike to somebody's house, and you weren't going to be hanging out with them too much, you know. But once I moved to Virginia, then it was like, I don't know, kids were like getting rides, and so it was a lot more social. Like, kids were, I don't know, it's just different. Kids acted a lot different. They would like go to the mall. Kids were like dating and shit. They're like 12 years old, 11, 12 years old.
So, when did you start getting into music, and what was the music that you were really into?
Honestly, I think that it was the first. I mean, I got into music real young. My mom would always play records and stuff. We'd listen to like the Beatles and Motown and stuff like that. And my mom was really loved folk music a lot. She's into that shit. I remember being obsessed with, like, a Chuck Mangione record when I was a kid. But I don't know. I think the first music I discovered on my own without being like, you know, my brother didn't show me or wasn't like from a movie that I saw or whatever was, forget the call letters, but it was 90.1 in D.C., like the DCU maybe. It was the jazz station. And I remember listening, I would have like, have my clock radio on late at night when I was a kid, like when I was hanging out in my room. And I remember I was just dialing through and I was like, oh, this sounds cool. I didn't know what it was. And I was listening to it. And then I just really got into like, jazz. I didn't know what it was, but I was like, I like this music. Like, I don't know what it is. Cause my dad was really into like, soul and like R&B and blues and stuff, but I don't think he was ever really super into jazz. So he never really turned me on to that. And, I kind of figured that shit out on my own. I was kind of got really into that a lot. And I think that sparked a lot of the rest of the stuff, you know, the momentum of where I went from there, you know.
Did you try to play any of it? I mean, did you?
Yeah, I picked up the trumpet. That was actually the first instrument I ever played. So I was like around, I think it was sixth grade. And I was like, I want to play the trumpet because it's, you know, a jazz instrument. And I played for 2 years, but it was like very rudimentary band and, you know, I mean, obviously I wasn't going to, that's what you have to do to learn how to play. But I just was like, oh, this isn't like what I thought it was going to be. I want to play that music that I like, you know, whatever. So I kind of stopped playing trumpet. I just kind of gave it up for school wise.
Yeah. And then, what made you like get, Was it way later on when you got into turntables, or?
Well, no, in between that, actually, about the same, right around the same time, my brother started getting into, well, he was kind of sort of into it a little bit, I guess, before, but started to get into, like punk rock and hardcore, and he turned me on to that when I was, like, end of sixth grade, and then into seventh grade, I got really into it. That's really all I listened to was hardcore and punk rock with, you know,
what
a lot
kind of stuff?
All the DC stuff. Boy, all anything from all the old DC stuff, Minor Threat, Bad Brains, Teen Idols, Void, all that stuff. You know, all the Discord stuff. And got into like the Misfits and found out about all the other bands that were out different parts of the country. Got really into like the Dead Kennedys. Kind of graduated along and just sort of found out about contemporary bands at the time, which was, you know, I'd say by the time I was into eighth, ninth grade, I was into like Born Against, Floor Shock, a little New York band, Citizens Arrest. Guys were getting real big. And then I started getting into like a lot of garage and stuff at the same time. I sort of like, and I was still listening to a lot of jazz too. Sort of all over the place, and then got really into like hip hop, like old school hip hop, because I liked that a lot when I was a kid. When remember in the early '80s when breakdancing and hip, you know, when like Run DMC got really big, we would all, my brother and my neighbors and stuff would get, like, we'd go and break into the back of the appliance store and take like their cardboard for the refrigerator and just to break dance on. And then I kind of got back into that shit right around the same time I was getting into hardcore and stuff, and I got real into Public Enemy a lot, because I was starting to get, like, you know, it's like, I was like 12, 13, I was starting to get, like, politically minded, especially after listening to the Dead Kennedys, you know, like, started being like, what the fuck? The world's so fucked up. So then I got into, you know, Public Enemy really appealed to me because of the lyrics and stuff, and then kind of pursued other hip hop from there. And yeah, man, it's fucking, you know. Then,
well, I'm surprised during all that punk rock you weren't like picking up the guitar and.
Right into seventh grade, me and a couple kids, Peter Schultz and John Buell, we formed a band. I was going to be the singer and Peter played guitar. And then we realized that we needed at least a drummer, and we didn't know anyone to play the drums. So I was like, well, I'll just go get drums, and went and got a drum set, like an old beat out drum set. When I got this drum set, and it was a used drum set, and the guy had turned it in, and he had put like stretched leopard spandex over the shell, and put the hardware back on, you know, so it, like, looked like the shells were leopard print, but it was like spandex. And then I got that thing. It was like, took all the spandex off, and we started a band. We had a couple different bands, actually, for about four years. And then,
What were they called? What were some of the names? I love kids' band names.
One of them, we had Ben Hur. That was probably the band that we played in the longest. And then there was Insect. And then for a while, I ended up leaving the band, but Peter and John and Nate Bowles, and I think Kelly Medford maybe too. Oh, actually, she was in Ben Hur for a while, but she was a singer. And then they formed Panther, which was like a really weird noise band where they would play instruments, but they would also play, like, I found out about Chrome and how they would play like tape decks on their recordings of like weird sounds and shit while they were playing. So like they got into that, doing that, but also a noise band and kind of some weird shit. Actually, Sam McPheeters was like, did a review of their tape, I think, in maybe Maximum Rock and Roll or something like that. I don't know if he was that one, but it was pretty cool. They got, that was like successful for that, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, man. And so we played that, and then we started playing like weird, more like, it actually kind of got into like weird, like fusion music. I don't even know what the hell it was. That was our last band. That was Insect. And Peter was actually played in Anathema for a while too. That was like the like metal band. I think Rich Work was in that band. Yeah, he played with them, and I'm pretty sure that's all.
Where were you guys playing out?
We played, there was like a place that was like a coffee shop or something, and the band would play in like the window.
In D.C.?
I think it was in Fairfax. Oh, no, we didn't play in D.C. We never played in D.C. We played like people's garages, like at their house.
Was it Dharma?
Yeah. We played there one time, and we opened for Steve, what's his name's band? Oh, fuck, I can't remember the kid's name. I still know him, kind of. He was like CSP. He used to DJ with us, too. But, fuck, I can't remember his name. That sucks. But we opened for his band, and we went up and played one song. And they turned the power off, and they were like, you guys can't play. Like, they were just playing crazy-ass noise, like, improv, like, fucked up. Like, not just, like, noise, but, like, it was like grooves and shit. Like, we were super funky, but it was just really weird. Like, we all used to take a lot of acid and stuff, you know, so we'd just play weird-ass shit, fucking, I don't know. Sometimes we would just, like, try to horrify people. I don't know. It was just for fun, you know? And then, but yeah, they stopped us after one song. Oh, Mike Donnelly played the bass with us in that band. And that was the original Chuck Street Players, was a band. And it was, like, Rob Bob would put, and me would, like, switch off on fucking congas and drums. Like, he and he had a timbali set. We would play that shit. And I don't know. Oh, Mikey would play bass. I think Pat or Dave, or sometimes Dave Knapp would play bass too, or guitar, and Pat would play guitar. And that shit was cool. And then that was the Chuck Street Players were the bands that played at Dharma. And fucking, they stopped the show. And then I remember probably not very long after that, Pat Miranda fucking got, what do you call it? He traded his snowboard for turntables. And he had turntables at his house, and we would all go over his house, fuck around. And then Hugo got fucking a set of old turntables. But Pat got Techniques, I think, and like a Gemini mixer. Like, he got a real setup. But Hugo, I think he had like an old pyramid mixer with like a fucking, instead of like a VU meter, it had a VU meter, but it was like a needle. Like, that's how old the mixer was, instead of like...
I never heard of a pyramid mixer.
Mm-hmm. It was like a two-channel, and it was like wood grain, like fake wood grain on the outside. It was fucking awesome. That's how I learned to beat match with that thing, because he had that in a JVC turntable I don't know if it was direct drive or not, but it had pitch control. I think it was belt-driven, but it had pitch control. But it was a little dial that you could turn. Like, it wasn't like a slider, like fucking turntables now and shit.
Yeah.
And then there was another one, and I think that one didn't have, maybe it had pitch control. I think it was like very limited. It wasn't like all the way like the other one. And then, yeah, and I learned how to like mix records on that fucking thing, so that by the time I got to like play, like even like a turntable that was direct drive, it was just like butter, like so easy, you know? So... It was awesome. And then so Pat got all these. He had, like, a bunch of old techno records that he got and some hip-hop records, like beat, you know, just, like, beats and scratch records, you know? And then we would all fuck around on those. And then I can't remember. I think Hugo was the next person to get tables. I think Pat ended up selling his tables. And then I think he got another set. I don't know. He moved to Blacksburg and was doing parties down there for a long time. And, that was when him and Julie were together, they were together for years. And then fucking, he ran the party scene down there, man, fucking in Blacksburg. And, then the Truck Street Players crew was turned, you know, we did a bunch of parties all over, but I don't remember. We did a lot of house parties out of that. Played some shows in Blacksburg, and we did some clubs, but I don't remember where they were. It was in D.C., but I don't really... It was a long time ago, you know?
Yeah. Well, so who was the main crew of the Truck Street Players?
Well, I mean, it was a whole family, but then the DJ crew, that was, like, kind of a division of it, because it was, like, all of... Our whole crew of people that hung out, like, up in the graveyard, you know, who were, like, the Truck Street Players, you know, but that was, like, a huge extended family. That was, like... You know, everybody. I mean, you know all of them. You know, fucking.
Yeah. Well, why don't you explain it for people that don't know, that aren't in the know?
Well, it started out with a bunch of Fox Mill kids, and then a bunch of kids, like, from, like, Oakland, Vienna and shit, that met through, we met, like, kind of before. I think the first time I met Hugo was at a jam for man in Reston, which was, like, before I was in high school, and it was like, I don't think I ended up going inside for some reason. Maybe I didn't have like $5 or whatever. But we got really stoned outside, and it was like one of the first times I got stoned. Well, it was like, no, maybe not. Like, I had been stoned a bunch of times, but it was still really early, you know. Fucking, we like went. To the it was over by the Baskin Robbins in Reston.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the place, maybe the community Reston Community Center probably.
And yeah.
We went over there and got milkshakes instead of going in. And we were just hanging out outside, and then it let out, and then I think I met maybe like talked to Pat for the first time that night too, maybe. So I think he came outside. He was inside. But Yeah, so I met those guys, and then we all, and then when we all started going to Oakton High School, we kind of like reunited with them. And we were like, oh, like fucking, we all started hanging out, and like they would hang out with all the like freak kids out in the, like the cigarette corner or whatever, and all the, everyone would like, people were like take a lot of acid and stuff, you know, like fucking. That's how I got into all that, all of everything, man. Basically, like, tried all my first drugs from all those kids, you know. Fucking started. But the name came from, because we would all go over, because Chuck lived over next to this like graveyard, or like it was. I don't even think it was a graveyard. We always called it that, but I think it was just like a foundation of a building that wasn't there anymore, you know.
Mhm.
And there was like trees growing up because it was so old, but we used to all hang out up there and like smoke weed and fucking drink. And it was, so it'd be like, oh, meet at Chuck Street, you know, because he'd just go up in the graveyard. My kids would just pull up and park like in front of the graveyard, not even at Chuck's house, you know, it was like, so it became like the crew was like Chuck Street. And then we were trying to think of a name for our band when we all started jamming, and we were like, wanted it to be like an old timey name. You know, so that's where like the Players came from, and people would think it was like supposed to be like Pimps or whatever, but it was like, it wasn't that. It was fucking like it was like the hot, like the band, like the parade band or whatever, you know, like the such and such Players, you know.
Yeah, or the Ohio Players.
Yeah, exactly.
I get it.
So we did that, and then it just turned into like the name of all of the like people that hung out. I mean, it was like, we were like, oh, that's a great band name, but then we just started calling the whole thing that, because it was so, such an amalgam, like people would come and go and play. We didn't, it wasn't like actual band members or like this so-and-so and so-and-so is in the band. It's just like whoever was playing an instrument at the time, you know? And sometimes it was people that didn't even play an instrument. They just would pick it up and make noise if they like took enough drugs, you know?
Yeah, I remember going over to Hugo's and hearing Sam and just being like, you know, kind of what the fuck is this?
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Carr being like, they're awesome. And me being like, I don't know. I don't know if they know how to play their instrument.
Yeah, we would just grab shit and fucking, most of the time it would be super nice grooves, you know, like me and Dave, like if I played drums, and Dave Mack would play the bass a lot of the time. Or sometimes he and I would take, Peter Schultz never really got, he never got into drugs with acid and shit, but sometimes we would, me and Dave would take acid and have Peter come over and play guitar, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And we would because Dave and I had like our own like rhythm section. We played with a bunch of different combos with people, but we would just kind of experiment and shit, like with rhythms stuff. And that was really cool to have like us on our shit. And then Peter was like a phenom, but he was real straight, you know, fucking. But he was almost like he was on drugs, but he was totally straight, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I remember one party over at my house. I had congas there, and Dave played the congas. Like, mm-hmm. it just sort of broke into a go-go jam.
Oh, yeah.
Over in my basement. And
did
Dave,
you live on the lake? You lived on the lake, right?
Yeah, yeah. And Dave played those congas till his hands just bled.
Yeah, yeah.
All over the congas, but he just kept going and kept going.
Yeah, he would do that with the bass a lot, too. He wouldn't even realize when bass. He did it one time with his kid's brand new bass, and the kid was all upset because he got blood all over his bass. But, you know,
he didn't give a fuck.
No, it was worth it. If you heard what he was playing, then it was, you know. Mike Donnelly was a fucking lunatic on the bass, too, man. I've never really heard anybody play like that. But Hugo used to say he could make the bass talk. And I was like, that's a pretty apt description. Like, that's pretty much what it sounded like, you know.
So did you guys record much of the stuff that you did?
Yeah, we recorded a lot of stuff, actually. It's all on cassettes. It's like in my parents' basement somewhere, I think.
So did you make tapes for other people or ever sell your
stuff? No, just record it to hear, like, what it was, and then just, like, listen to it on the Walkman.
You guys never really pursued anything, you know, trying to get, like, a really clean professional recording?
No, it just wasn't like that. It was, like, never really was that kind of thing. Like, I always, well, sometimes when it would be, like, you know, when we were Peter and Dave and I, like, I would record it, and it was definitely a different kind of a thing. Like, it was more on that level, you know, where we could have done that, but it was just for fun, and the cassettes, you know, we didn't have any money for anything like that, so just recording it on a boombox from, you know, behind a pillow was good, you know?
Yeah. So what was, like, where did you get all the, your own records and start, like, developing your collection and...
DJing, I'll go to a lot of places, like, mainly, like, record shops in D.C., you know, like, or Baltimore. Baltimore is like a treat, but it was hard to get gas money together to get people up there, but, Baltimore was like, has all the best records at the time. Once we got into, like, doing a fucking house of techno, you know, jungle and shit, and all the good records up there. I mean, there was good shops in D.C., too. Like, I used to, like, what's it called? Like, Music Now, it's good. I don't even remember, man. I can't remember the name. Modern Music was in Baltimore. That was a good one.
Who were you kind of, like, modeling yourself after, or, like, what professional DJs?
I think that in the beginning, all of us, our hero was Doc Martin, I would say. He's now here doing parties. I have yet to go to one of the parties yet, but does stuff like right around here all the time, downtown shit at Union and stuff. But I've seen him before. I saw him at Fever a couple times, but I haven't seen him out here yet. But Doc Martin was a big one. I always liked Joey Beltram a lot. I still idolize those guys, you know, as far as like my, you know, the sensibilities goes.
And what were your different progressions in terms of like the kind of music and like what, you know, in terms of electronic music or dance music, like what were the different waves of things that you got into?
I always liked house first. I mean, that's what I still do, is house techno, you know, but, I think everybody got into drum bass jungle, but it didn't stay with me in the same way. It was like kind of, I liked it, but not, I couldn't listen to it at any time, you know, was really a house head for a long, long time. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of it. I never really got into, like, a lot of other stuff. Like, I don't know. I just, like, I still play, like, old-fashioned techno in house, you know?
Did different guys in the CSP have different, like, specialties? Like, I remember Nate was really into jungle.
I mean, they pretty much all only play jungle now. You know, that's pretty much, they all do drum and bass now. I know Barney definitely does, but that's what he does. They still do, like, an old techno or house set, but, like, if you go on their SoundClouds and shit, it's just, they do all drum and bass.
And so, I mean, when did you get your, and how did you get your DJ name?
Well, actually, it was my current, the one I use now, DJ Red Bees, came from, there was a story that I read a story about, it actually just came out, it was like a national story again, like within the last couple months, but years ago when I first moved to New York, there was a story about this maraschino cherry factory in Red Hook, where there were the people in the neighborhood who had, or even across the water, who had like apiaries, they were keeping bees, were noticing that the honey was like turned into red goop and that the bees were red. And they couldn't figure it out, and then it turned out they were getting into the syrup somehow from the maraschino cherry factory. So problem solved, blah, blah, blah. Then later on, there was a tip that there was some kind of marijuana distribution thing going on with the maraschino cherry factory. So acting on the old environmental warrant, they were able to get in to reinspect, but then ended up finding, like, a wall, a false wall or something, and they got into it. There was a giant growing facility underneath the factory. And then when the police raided the guy who was the owner, like, panicked and shot himself, like, locked himself in his office and shot himself. But the way I read the story, it was so casual. All these facts were just so casually mentioned. And I don't even remember where I read the story originally. It was online. I don't know what publication it was. I was talking to a friend of mine, and I'm like, oh, man, someday I want to do a project and call it Red Bees, because I just thought I liked the name, the sound of it or whatever. And then kind of put that on the shelf for a while. And then when I got to the point where I was going to start, like, DJing out again, like, touring and stuff, and I was like, well, I want to come up with a good moniker, but I'm not trying to be too serious about it. And I was like, oh, shit, I can use Red Bees, so... That's how DJ Red Bees came about, and that's it.
So did you take some time off of DJ?
Oh yeah, I didn't. I mean, when I moved from Virginia, I didn't for a couple of years, and then a friend of mine, Dave Keys, that I met in Cape Cod, he was really, really good. There's this rapper, and I was like, well, I DJ, you know, and I love hip-hop, I like DJing hip-hop. I mean, I would do that sometimes, you know, in Northern Virginia, but it just wasn't enough to even mention compared to how much house I was, you know, doing. So, but I could definitely, you know, can beat match hip-hop, especially just beats, play beats for somebody to rap over.
Everybody think they know me now, 'cause I'm chicken checking, Negro, you and I'm a homie, how dare.
do that and like play like stuff online and whatever. And then he ended up getting turntables and a mixer. And I showed, you know, taught him how to DJ, and then we started DJing, like going out on gigs. And we used to open for this band, like a card called Roots Down Below. We want to do some of their shows, and we did independent shows. And then it just kind of fell off a little bit, and I moved out of his place, and we ended up losing all of our records, which is a long, complicated story, but I lost all my print, most of my vinyl, because it was all stored at his house, and there was a bunch of shit that happened where it just went, just gone, you know? But then I moved, well, I still live in Cape Cod, but I ended up getting a couple of turntables, so I don't even know how. And then I started doing, like recording, and I started making beats with like a drum machine and a sampler. And I got way into that. And then,
And you were making hip hop beats, or you were making?
Yeah, I was making hip hop, and not. I wasn't really into, playing or listening to like house music anymore. Way more into like old soul and R&B and stuff. Just kind of, I don't know. I'm still listening to a lot of stuff today, but
getting back to dad.
Huh?
Channeling your dad a little bit.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. So, and then I just started working with this band when I met them on Cape Cod, because they're from there. Highly Suspect. And like, I met the singer Johnny through Dave, my buddy Dave Keith, and he was like, "Oh, you should come check out our band sometime." And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And I didn't want to, because I didn't want to be like, I don't want to have to like tell you your band's good when they're probably not gonna be, you know. And I ended up, they was like, "Yeah, you know, you call me, we get free dinner and beers." I was like, "Oh yeah, I'll come by," you know.
All right.
And I ended up going. I was like, "Oh, you guys are great. I see what they're doing. You know, this is cool, and it was a really fun time. I mean, all their shows were just parties. It was always fun, you know."
Cold and dark, I am the hungry shark, fast and merciless. But the only girl that could talk to him just couldn't swim. Tell me what's worse than this. And the echoes in the halls, they dance along the walls, the memories of your goals. You were the one that I used to love, and I'm still in love, and I never loved you the most. I've seen better days, so afraid in my youth. I can't breathe, restless belief. You give me everything you have, every little thing you have. I'm your love on repairs. I've seen your best words and match words.
And I was like, "Hey, go talk to girls and fucking hang out with the band, drink for free. Like, that sounds good." And then so I was like, "I'll help you guys with your shit and help you get the sound right, you know, whatever." And they started doing that, showing up to their gigs and helping them carry the gear and shit. Because, they were all carrying it and setting it up. And they had their own PA. We'd set up the PA. Eventually, you know, they were like, because they were writing songs, or started to write songs a little bit. And they were like, they had an album that they recorded, and they wanted to keep pursuing it, so they moved out of Cape Cod and moved to Brooklyn. And they were there for a little while, and they would come back on the weekends and still play the bar shows in Cape Cod, because it was, you know, to pay the rent in New York. Well, they were still playing shows and not getting paid in New York, you know what I mean, to play shows.
Mm-hmm.
They'd play shows during the week, and then, like, you know, do odd jobs. Like, one guy's a carpenter. They both do carpentry. One guy's fucking like working waiting tables, you know what I mean? Like, doing fucking shit jobs and fucking, they would still come back on the weekend. And then eventually, they took, you know, well, then they picked up, they asked me to come to New York because they were like, well, we still need somebody to help us with all this shit, fucking, you know, you're good at, like, keeping them, everybody glued together and blah, 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 whatever, you know, so. I left Cape Cod and moved to Brooklyn, moved into their place, which is like a studio apartment, but.
What year is this?
I moved there in 2013.
Okay.
Because I lived on Cape Cod for like 10 years, 11 years, almost 11 years. But definitely went through a lot of different music while I was there. Played in a couple bands. Well, I was there too, played drums and played bass. I don't really play bass, you know.
it seems like you're just down to like play whenever you can, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's got a good groove.
Sure.
Wherever there's going to be the best party.
Yeah. That's my philosophy in life, man. But I actually played in a really good jazz combo while I was on Cape Cod that's worth mentioning. A piano player named Alan Boyer, who has a band in Maine now. It's called Hyperphonic, I believe. And that guy's a trip, man. He's one of the trippiest dudes I've ever met. But he's from California, and he's like an old hippie. Not old, but, you know, his mind is old. And he's like... He just played some really cool shit, and that guy turned me on to a lot of jazz that I had never even really checked out. And, like, he turned me on to, like, Sun Ra. He really turned me around on Charles Mingus, who I guess maybe when I first listened to when I was younger, I just didn't get it or something, but got me way into Mingus and
I love Mingus.
Sun Ra, and turned me on to all Joe Zawinul stuff, and just a really good guy, man. One of my favorite. Like, people that I've met as far as musical influence who helped me out. And then we were playing, and then it was just the two of us playing, and then we ended up actually getting a decent four-track recording with an upright bass player named Laird. Laird Bowles, I think it was. And I was lucky enough to get to record that day, which was cool. It was one of the only time we got to really play with a bass player, and I coincidentally got to record it, so it was good. It's one of my cherished recordings. And then he and I, you know, Alan came to me with a lot of stuff. Dave Keys played with us too. He would scratch and lay down like sound effects and stuff while we were playing. But when we were first, you know, we didn't have there was no bass. It was like Alan could only, he would try to do a lot with his left hand, but it was his melody, his stuff's pretty complicated, so it was kind of necessary to have like that extra bottom end, you know. It was good when we played with Laird that time, but he came to me with he had material, but he didn't really have the stuff like arranged. So he and I would arrange. He and I did a lot of the arrangement on the pieces. It's in a lot of the pieces that he's still playing now, and he sent me some recordings of them. They're just phenomenal. The stuff that he's, the places that he's taken them with like more players and like electric players are just, it's just tremendous.
Well, I mean, it's awesome that you're getting a chance to come back and, like, play BC, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. Yeah, we get Black Cat, which is, you know.
And people, you know, people that you grew up with that are still around can go out and see you play, you know,
yeah.
And see you up there. I mean, that's really, like, kind of the dream when you start playing music.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's like, I remember when I used to say, you know, I would love for music just to pay the bills, like keep my stomach full and put a roof over my head, and I really couldn't ask for more than that because it's what I love to do, and it's just, you know, it's amazing just to start to do that, you know what I mean? Like, I know how lucky I am, you know, every day if you just see it, you know, it's like traveling the world with my friends to fucking do what I would do, like, when after work, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, that's
amazing.
The point.
Yeah.
Mean, if you're not that into music, you shouldn't be in the first place. So the fact that you get to do it, you know, for fun, and then also it pays the bills.
Yeah, because I went through, I remember I, because, you know, when the band was starting, once they signed a record label and we were touring, and we started touring nationally, and I was their tour manager and hauling the equipment and selling merch. And then we were able to get a merch person who was our friend and our roommate. And then we were able to get another, you know, start bringing on roadies and start bringing people out. And then I moved up, you know, we ended up getting another tour manager. So then I moved on to stage manager because what happened when I was their tour manager was this, it either be their tour manager or be their friend, because it starts driving a wedge between you because you're their, like, babysitter, and they just, you know, it's no longer like your friends anymore. You feel like an employee more or less, you know, not that
yeah,
really happens,
you got to get everybody to the place on time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So then.
Yeah, that's like herding cats.
Yeah, exactly. Totally what it is. And then once it got to that, and then I was stage manager, and then it got to the point where we got another, you know, more, enough people, we had a lighting director and some, and a merch director, and, you know, we had to bring somebody on that's like the tech. And so then I graduated, and they were like, you know, you should just, we really want to bring, because Dave Keys, well, before I met the band, Dave Keys used to DJ with them, much in the way that he and I did with the other bands before that. So they were like, you know, we want to bring that back to the live set so that it's like, there's somebody, because before we had our own front of house, we had front of house, the local front of house, which, you know, most of those guys are great, but it's you're dependent on their taste in music to set the mood for the night. And sometimes it was great, and sometimes it wasn't really the mood that we wanted, you know, so it was adding the DJ from doors until, if there's an opener, until the opener, made it so that, or in the very beginning, I was just like, set up the playlist before I had turntables, and then I was like, we could just get one, you know, a controller and a laptop and use Serato, because I've used it before, and it's not the same. It turns out I really don't care about the method. I love vinyl, and if I had 12, I would be psyched. You know, I'd love to have vinyl, you know, Technique 1200s with a mixer at my house, and that'd be awesome. But I don't have records anymore because I lost my whole record collection for the most part. So now I can just be, while I'm spinning set, decide I want to play this song and buy it on the spot. It's 99 cents. And play it, like, next song. You know what I mean? It's amazing. It's like, I love it. I love I don't care. I just want to play the song. I don't care the method. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
I love vinyl, but, you know, it's just not really feasible for me anymore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, preferably you should have both. Because
yeah.
if you love vinyl, you know, as a collector and just as a fun thing to do, you know, to get records and just be able to throw them on at home. Like, it's a nice thing. Man, I've been lucky enough. I don't know about lucky enough. Like, it's been work to lug my record collection to every different place that I've moved.
That's
and take care of it and everything like that. But I feel as like a time continuum thing, you know? It's got all these records from different phases of my life.
Yeah, I
and
agree.
So
I mean,
I love having it, but I wouldn't want to lug that around the freaking world with me.
No, I mean, I have about 3,500 records. I mean, that's too many.
Yeah, that's nuts. So if you can just do it easy and, you know, fairly cheaply, more power to you to do it that way.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how many albums I have, the laptop's the same weight, you know?
So, listen, I'm going to have to go in a minute.
Shit.
but I do want to ask you, like, what is next and what... you know, what should we be on the lookout from you and what are your plans like musically?
Well, there's stuff that I've been made offers that I can't really, I mean, I'm not trying to be like coy, like there really is stuff I can't talk about that's talking to somebody about, but, which is really exciting and I hope that it happens, but you know, so. Nothing's indefinite in the music industry, so. But I definitely, the band that I tour with and help write with and stuff sometimes, well, they, are going into the studio very soon and they're going to be putting out a record and they'll be touring. Probably won't tour until next spring, but some people I've been talking to and on Venice and stuff about doing sets, DJ sets, so.
Nice. All right. Well, let me know about those because I'll come out to those.
Oh, for sure.
You know, because I'm local. I don't know about everybody else listening to this, but I can actually go see you play.
Yeah, sure.
And where can people find like your music? You know, if they want to catch up with what you've been doing, where
what
mix?
I mean, I have DJ mixes on SoundCloud, DJ Red B's. That's pretty much it. I mean, Mixcloud's pretty much the same set, so I just have them on both, so.
Okay.
SoundCloud
and Mixcloud.
Nothing exciting. There's sets that I like, you know, but nothing exciting as far as that goes. I don't know.
It's awesome catching up with you after all this time. It's so weird, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I haven't seen you in like 20 years, but.
yeah.
But it's awesome to hear from you, and it's great to know that you're out there still doing it. You know, you're still making music, and you know that somebody from the CSP is really making good out here on the West Coast. It's really cool.
Man. Well, I'm glad you're doing this because that's like, you know, that's a huge part of my youth and my inspiration from the beginning was those days, you know? So it's cool that you're documenting it, you know?
You might not have known them if you hadn't gone to Jam for Man.
Yeah, exactly.